Thank you for listening to this podcast brought to you by the Center for Christian Music Studies at Baylor University. This podcast was recorded at the 2011 Alleluia Conference. In this session titled, It Takes Two to Tango, Mary Kay Parrish will discuss the responsibilities of both directors and handbell ringers. Whose job is more vital? What does each owe to the other? These questions and more will be answered in this session. To learn more about the Alleluia Conference, visit us online at www.baylor.edu/alleluia.
Like missing keys on a piano, but they're not there.
Okay, that's right.
Just like a football team.
Yeah. And you can learn to play without those people. You know, you teach your ringers to go ahead and ring, learn the rhythm of their part, which I think is an important thing that I teach. So that if somebody's missing or somebody fails to come in when they're supposed to, this person can go ahead and do it. Okay, you learn. So if they're absent, you can do it. But what happens to the musical lines that you need to build? What happens to the accompaniment pattern? What did they miss by not being there, knowing what their bells were supposed to be doing at a certain point? So it's more than just being faithful. It really makes a difference. Okay, be on time. Do you have problems with that? You do? What do we do about that?
Start on time.
Okay. Start on time, and then they're embarrassed. Some of them aren't, but mine were really embarrassed, and so they didn't do it. And of course, when I taught at college, I had a grade to hold over their heads, but I didn't need it. They came, we're talking about woman in here a few weeks ago. It's a friend of one of my former ringers, and I was telling her she came to bell rehearsal one day after she had gotten hurt really bad in intramurals. And she didn't want me to know that she had been playing flag football. Because I, you know, preached to them about protecting their limbs and so forth. And so she came, and she was standing on one leg and playing because her leg was really hurt. I had another one who was a carver. He was part Indian, and he carved, and he stuck a deal right here, baseball ringer. He stuck his carving, whatever, right through this finger, and he came to rehearsal and played the whole time with that horrible thing. So, I was very fortunate in the people I had to work with. Okay, and the ringers. See, you're not ringers, but so far you're with me on what to expect. Okay. Give the director your full attention. What does that mean? just when she tells you to, he tells you to.
When you stop?
When you stop. That's the most important time, because you lose so much time when people just start gabbing as soon as you stop. And it, a lot of times it's, they're trying to figure it out. They're trying to do
that's
it.
That's what you have to determine.
Huh?
You have to determine why it is they're talking.
Right. And but my deal is, if I know why I stopped, sometimes it solves that problem. And so they don't need to talk about it until they hear what I have to say, and then they can ask for help. Or I mean, that was just whatever. They learned. We had fun. We laughed a lot. But still, I'm not all for efficiency in rehearsal, if you say that to them. So, not at the expense of anybody's feelings. Or anybody's, I don't know what else. But anyway, I don't want to put a damper on things. I want people to enjoy what we're doing. That's very important to me, to have a good time at it, but not to have a good time at the expense of wasting time. Okay, work to improve your own technique. Do you have any suggestions about that? What things you might have them do?
Practice with spoons at home.
Practice with spoons. Practice with bottles.
Come early to practice.
Pardon?
Come early to practice.
Come early to practice. Mm-hmm. Get with your neighbor. The neighbor that you're living and share a folder with. Practice on parts. You know, most of the ringers know when they mess up. They know they can't do this. And so they just need to make a note of it and then comment other times. Or I'm glad to meet with them and help them. Mm-hmm. So that was always an option, and a lot of them took advantage of that. But they also, my college ringers would come in and work things out themselves because they knew they were holding back the whole group. So they worked on that. Okay? How about being patient with new ringers? Is that a problem?
Just came off. Had a flashback.
The impatient one, or
was it? No, yeah. Actually, I think new ringers are probably harder on themselves than the director is. At least.
And give up?
No, just harder on themselves.
Mm-hmm. If you know that they're doing things that you've never done and you feel like you just messed up, I mean, that's what you did that one time. Yeah. And I was just trying to tell her.
She pointed me out, which I know you were going to say something, but when she said Mindy, I'm like, I.
Tears.
I just cried.
She was nervous. So she was nervous.
Yeah.
She don't do that anymore.
I haven't cried in a long time.
You have this on the list of what the director should expect from their ringer. So are you saying the ringers should be patient with you and the ringer?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
It's not just the director being patient.
And then, I don't know if I included that over here, but I should have. Yeah. You know, if you've been in a group of people who are pretty good and they've been at it a long time, and then we have to bring in new ringers, you can just see them going, you know, waiting on them. We do it three or four times and they still mess up and they still mess up. That you just can't have that kind of body language. It only makes it worse. They'll never overcome that, you know, if you aren't patient with them, and figure out a way to help them at another time. Okay? And take responsibility for your own part. And that, again, is know where you've messed up and practice on that. And also learn to ring whether anybody's there or not. Counting and ringing. Okay, and then spend extra time on the music that, of course, was we've already talked about. And then do your fair share. What does that mean? What does that entail?
Strike. Get up and take them.
Pack up. Load them, take down,
polish
your bells. Everybody else is involved in that. Mm-hmm. Do you have problems with that in your groups? Mm-hmm. Everybody? Mm-hmm. It's terrible. I have two or three ringers in my ladies. I had. Then my ladies came up who didn't mind polishing bells, and they were retired, so they just came and did it. Well, that kind of robbed the others of not only the fellowship of doing it, but also they didn't learn how if we did that. So. time, specific times when we can all get together and do that, and have a pizza party or something afterwards to make it a little bit worthwhile. Okay, what else?
Well, as a director, this is something that I want from my ringers, and that is, if there is talking, and again, it might be they're just not thinking of solving the problem, I want the other team members they're talking to not respond to them, or to say, I don't want to always be the one saying, hush, I'm trying to say something. I want the team to self-correct. I want the ones that aren't talking to help with that.
That happened to me once. We had a person here missing, and I asked for a male. It's all ladies' part, but I asked this guy to come in and play with us. He played bells very well. So he said, yeah. And he was over here yakking, you know, after every time he was just talking, and this person over here is going, you know, I'm not talking to him, but what do I do? I can't get out of it. So that's a good point. Others? What problems do you have with ringers? What are you? Are all in perfect?
Well, I have children and I have a hard time with them standing still or not showing off while they're ringing, like that Mindy's demonstrating. No, we have to have lessons on
etiquette,
ringing etiquette.
Yeah. So you do bells?
Third grade, chimes and bells.
Chimes and bells.
Mm-hmm. There's two groups we split.
The older they are,
at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just our ages to, you know, you have some of these kids that are just, you know, this little girl in children's choir, she just...
Yeah, truly, we have both.
Yeah. I'm there sometimes, just, you know, just gazing off, and you don't think she's listening, and most times she's not, but...
And at the performance, one of the little girls was just standing there. She didn't get started, or wasn't she just standing there?
Well,
she's
I've
not much taller than
that.
The table either. Well, and for children, back to the, what does the group sound like without everyone? One song that we all played beautifully, I said, okay, only this side of the room play.
Uh-huh.
Does that sound the same? You know,
yeah. Right.
It doesn't sound right.
Uh-huh. That's a good object lesson. Mm-hmm. Any other things like that? Yeah, kids.
I tell Sherry, she's a special soul. She does very well.
My kids were perfect, my own children, so it's not that I ever had any.
Well, that's up kindergarten, so working with third, fourth, and fifth graders is really a lot of fun.
It's all relative, right?
Yeah.
One thing as a director that I asked my ringers if they were going to be absent to find a suitable substitute.
I think it's important that you have a substitute list mm-hmm. that they can choose from
mm-hmm.
for your part, because if you tell them a suitable substitute, they might go out and get somebody they can't do it.
Right.
With my Ladies' Handbook Choir church and living across the street from the university, I mean being across the street, I never had problems with substitutes because they could play, the college kids could play as well as anybody in the choir, even though the choir was really good. They could play, they could sight read as well as the ones who were ordinarily there. But even so, sometimes if it was just one person and they couldn't be there, we did it out.
We're closer to performance.
Closer to performance than you
do. I almost never want a subject come in. It's better not to have so.
Just distracts everybody. But if you have multiple absences, then it becomes a problem. There's some directors who say if you have as many as two missing, three missing, call off rehearsal.
One time we had a bad storm and only the bass. You were awesome.
The tornado was about to strike, or we thought it was. And the church basically said, we're canceling everything, which included my rehearsal. But then it passed. And so the basis, so we still want to rehearse. And yeah, I didn't have time to call everybody, so it was a day sectional. It was kind of cool.
Sectional. Okay, anything else about what you expect from your ringers?
for a semester, okay, we're gonna play this Sunday, and we're gonna play this Sunday, and we're gonna do this concert, that. And so then you have people say, okay, well, I won't be here this one, and I can't be here this one. And so you've got different people playing and not playing, depending on which song you're working on, and, you know, that, how do you deal with that?
Well, I don't know, anybody else, I know what I would do, but... Have you had this problem?
It's a problem with our church too.
It is. Mm-hmm. And you can't find other times that everyone can be there?
Well, I don't necessarily mean for rehearsal. I mean, like, for that particular Sunday morning. Say, we're going to play on the second Sunday in October. Well, this person says, well,
I'm... have their grandbaby.
Yeah, my first grandbaby is scheduled to be born that Saturday, so I won't be there. And so then, okay, well, that's fine. We know ahead of time you're not going to be there, so we'll have somebody else fill into that position. But then we're going to work on other songs, and so they're sitting half the rehearsal, and they're some are sitting some. It's okay, well, you can, it gets to be frustrating sometimes.
The only solution I have for that is a 14th person, you know, so that you have someone, I mean, you have a regular process in place where there are 13 ringers, so one person sits out on a given piece at any given time, but there's your built-in sub.
Yeah.
So if you have somebody absent in advance, you know that now you've got a person that's already in the group.
And theoretically, that extra person can be asked to watch a group and then comment as a director. Any ringer that thinks of him or herself as a director is going to be a better ringer behind the table.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're seeing things from the outside looking in.
Okay, that's good. Anybody? Sometimes you have a hard enough time trying to find enough people to be in the main group, so it's kind of hard to find somebody who would be willing to sit there.
Especially somebody that could be versatile enough to fill in on the thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, in that time, the 14th person is, they're a regular member.
They're a regular.
So they rotate in. The 14th person is a different person out. Everybody's
out.
Yeah, so if you play 10 songs, if you play 14 songs,
Everybody
needs to sit out. Mm-hmm. And that's not too many. Bill Griffin, who's a noted handbell director, told me one time, I said, you know, I just hate for kids to be sitting around waiting. You know, it's a waste of their time. And then he said, well, I played the contrabassoon in the orchestra. You know how many notes I played? I give it Susan, and he said, but you wouldn't believe what I learned by watching and listening. He said, I wouldn't give anything for having sat there and watched the conductor and listened to what he said and the comments he made. He said, it's what made him a good director. So I know a lot of people aren't that conscientious about it. But anyway.
Well, that's the struggle, because what we do as church musicians isn't just creating a musical product.
Yeah.
That's the struggle. It's also ministry. So you need to determine what it is as a team is our ministry, is what our goal is as a team. But that isn't always what Ringer 7's goal is or Ringer 5's. You have to come to some kind of consensus, and that's hard in ministry.
Yeah.
It's not as hard when you're giving a grade at OBU or Baylor, but it's hard in ministry sometimes for me to either be not too tough or not too easy. It's
yeah.
A balance.
Yeah, we had a woman in our choir that she couldn't do it. And we had a pretty good choir at church. And we had a pretty good choir, and she just couldn't keep up. She couldn't do it. And everybody said, you need to tell her, you know, find something else for her to do. And I said, well, she's going to figure it out herself and decide that she can be useful, do ministry a different way. And it wasn't long before she did that. And we were not unnice to her. And she bought us a whole lot of stuff for our handbell choir after that. After she left, she bought the stands that come across like this.
Mm-hmm.
She bought a whole set of those, and I don't know what else. Anyway, she was really interested in the group and treasured our ministry. But she couldn't do it. And I was so glad I never said anything to her. But this, and she knew it. She knew she was older than everybody then. But nobody treated her like she was, so that's good. Anything else?
Well, then you have the opposite.
What? Then you have the opposite?
You have the really, really fine ringer that's sort of arrogant.
Oh, yeah. Can you still say that now that she's coming back?
Oh, sure, I didn't see you.
I didn't hear you. Yeah. Well, it's a good thing.
We were talking about the arrogant ringer. Don't think that's me.
Do you have an arrogant ringer?
Yep.
Is it only us?
I had a beginning ringer that thought he knew everything. What's our deal with?
Oh.
Eight.
Yeah. Use the
teenagers. It's what?
Teenagers can be worse.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They know everything.
Uh-huh. They don't mind them.
And she will tell the person next to her how stupid they are, so.
It's usually her sister or brother.
Yeah, she says the word stupid, too. So.
Yes. But yes, yeah, it's all in one family in our church. They're all awesome ringers, but it's hard to deal with it sometimes. And my talk group has learned not to take anything she says real seriously. And she really, and I've spoken one-on-one with her, and she dissolves. You know. That's just who she is. I mean, she just, and sometimes she's better than other times, but it's a challenge. Because she really doesn't make any mistakes. But she'll tell the person next to her when they make a mistake.
I caught her in some mistakes.
I saw that.
I did.
She's like a doer. She does make some mistakes.
But anyway.
Yeah. Not many.
Not many, but it was good to see them.
That's not the same thing, but I had a ringer who, when she became a senior, after being in the choir 4 years, she became a senior, and all of a sudden she thought that she didn't need to help anymore. And the ringers, the seniors before that, they all took leadership roles. You know, they were in charge of this and in charge of that, and they volunteered for those things, and they really became really good leaders. She just thought she had arrived and didn't need to do anymore. They got on her like, I didn't have to much deal with it, but it was hard on the morale of the group. Somebody behaved like that. Okay, so let's go over to the other side and see what a conscientious ringer should expect from the director. So if they have to be there on time, you sure as you can better start on time. It's really hard at a conference to start and end on time when it's not your fault. They run over at the luncheon, or they run over in the worship service, and then you have to race to get here. And so anyway, you can do that. You begin right when you said it starts. And if they're not all there, they'll all realize how terrible that is, and they'll quit that. I was going to say back on the ringers that attending rehearsals consistently. My lady's Sandville choir, if I was unable to be there because I was out at the college group or something, they had rehearsal anyway. I mean, that didn't matter. It didn't matter if I was there or not. I mean, they knew what to rehearse, and they just went ahead and had it. I didn't have to find the substitute director or anything. Sometimes I did if they wanted me to do it. Anyway, minimize the wasting of rehearsal time. What are the things that waste rehearsal time? The director. We've already talked about the talking with the ringers.
Solving problems.
Solving problems.
Yeah, lack of preparation.
Lack of preparation. Yeah. Having to wait until the rehearsal to solve the problem.
That really is frustrating from a ringer's perspective. I'm not a director and I haven't been ringing all that long, but it's very frustrating when I'm really working on something and she's like,
you know, I think we had talked about, and I mean, she's a good friend of both of ours, but that just makes me crazy.
Because I need all this stuff that I can get.
Yeah.
And we've got, you know, our adult fire right after, so it's not like we can run over by the person. We've got adult fire right after, so we have to polish bells and put it up. And it's, it really is frustrating from a, and it's very discouraging from a ringer's perspective.
I think that's the, one of the biggest things that, that ringers all don't expect from the director is that they are prepared. And the class, the second class of this series, I talked about marking music and assigning bells and marking music. And I spent so many hours doing that, but it just pays off and you don't have to work out. Most times you don't have to work out those problems because you have already taken care of them and you've already made up some warm-up exercises that address those.
There's been a time or two that we've actually just like, if me and the person next to me didn't figure it out and Carl was like, I don't know yet, we'll talk about it later. We'll just do it after class and just that, not trying. If it's not an easy solvable problem right then and there, then we'll just wait until
editing. Well, you're right. Base spells is a whole different thing because I always think of how they're going to do it, but a lot of times it's not the way they're comfortable doing it. There's more than one answer.
Mm-hmm. Right, there is.
With base spelling.
And it depends on which of the bells works out better for one person for them to...
I mean, there was a time that even the next time at rehearsal, you're like, guess what? This bell is going way over there, up, you know.
Yeah.
Which is good. Just don't forget. We just said that you were just like, I'm not going to deal with it right at this moment. Let me think about
right.
it.
Because that's a waste of time. Everybody right. else is sitting around waiting for right. you to do that. That's right.
Something Michael Bedford said the other day was, you should evaluate after every rehearsal.
Oh.
And if you do that, then you can think about where the problem spots were, and before that next week even comes around, know what you need to do.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I just always have a pencil, and if it doesn't work, good. And then what happens at rehearsal, if you go back and look where you hit the circles, and you don't have to stop conducting, you just draw your circle and keep going, and then you know those are the things.
And usually after the day of bronze rehearsal, I'm so exhausted just trying to keep up with it. I would just sit down and I would have what I just, my rehearsal, and I would be marking it for the next time. And one of them said, I can't believe you're planning a rehearsal for Thursday. I said, of course. Just when I'm thinking about it, you know.
Right, because it's fresh.
It's fresh.
And I do mine on the 2-hour drive back to Boston.
Uh-huh.
So
you do that? You read?
I'm not looking at the music. I remember the music.
You need to find time to do the preparation. And I spent entirely too much time on it, but it just pays off for me. Okay, so the next one says, did we finish up with wasting time? Everybody okay with that? Solve assignment problems before rehearsal. This is a big thing with me, to get it all figured out. So that everybody knows what they're doing when we start rehearsing. Because a committee is not the best way to do it. It needs to be one person. And if you don't have the time to do that, sometimes the director has two other jobs. You know, they're not just the handbell director. They have a full-time job and a church job as well. And they really don't have time. And then there's somebody over here who's retired, or somebody who's has a child, sleeps all day, baby that sleeps all day. So they have time to do things like that. And if you can teach them to do it, then they can help you out with it. But
one possible exception is I've got a fairly small youth choir. And actually, I call it an ensemble because there's last year there were 7 of us with me ringing. And I purposely, in my head, I knew how to work some stuff out, but I purposely not worked it out for them. And I used it as a teaching thing to teach them how to problem solve. I didn't want to come in and say, this is, you know, you're going to ring this, and this, and this, and this is how you're going to do it. Yeah. It was okay, let's look at this section and let's problem solve. What do you think you can do here? And for them, it was a teaching, teaching moment for me to teach. Now, I wouldn't do that with a full, you know, 11 or 13 member choir, because like I said, it's by committee.
But in this case, with the small ensemble, teaching them ensemble, teaching them, okay, why are you passing this? Why does this make sense? You know, what's a good solution?
Yeah. And that way they can become an ensemble without a director.
Right. Someday. Right. It helped them.
So that's a teaching.
It was a teaching. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're not really necessarily just doing it. I mean, you're not doing it for them to save rehearsal time. You're doing it to...
I'm intentionally taking rehearsal time for them to do it because I want them to learn how to do it.
Okay, and so if you saw all those problems, then the next one comes up, you know the assignments well. You figured all that out, and you figured all the bass bells out. With 10 ringers, how many ringers do you have?
Well, 14 with low chimes. We go down to C2, so it's 13 behind the table. The 14th on low chimes. We have 15 ringers.
So you talk about your group?
Well, Bayo Bronze varies from semester to semester.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't get us started. There was one semester I had 11 in Bayo Bronze, so we did a lot of.
Mine was 12 of the two semesters.
And then I had 15 one semester. It changes semester to semester.
You have six of them, right?
At Baylor? Uh-huh. Yeah, we go down, the bosses go down to C2.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, if you have to work out these problems, then you know, and so when something goes wrong, you know exactly how to tell them what needs to be done and how to fix it. So you need to improve your diagnostic skill, and that's later. Anyway, study the music thoroughly before each rehearsal. Now, when you talk about studying music, what is that? What does that entail? Does it just mean assigning the bells?
Learn how to conduct it.
Okay. Learn how, that's another one down here. Include practice of conducting gestures in your preparation.
Score study.
Score study. What's included in score study?
Anticipating the problems.
Anticipating the problems.
Okay. And then developing warm-up routines or exercises to take care of them.
Okay.
Form and phrase. Form and phrase.
Form and phrase, okay.
Where the music's going.
What's the piece
saying?
What is the structure of the piece? And that will help you to decide what you need to rehearse and what order you need to rehearse things in. Mm-hmm. And the phrases, how they rise and fall, or how they're shaped. Where the melody is, if it's in the middle, how are you going to call them the top down and the bottom down so you can hear that melody in the middle. Studying it's a big job. It's an important one. If you're going to make music, and our job is to make the best possible music we can make as an offering to God. So that needs to be uppermost in our minds. We're not doing this to look good. We're doing this because we're asked to do our best. Okay, so. Keep improving diagnostic and treatment skills. Sounds like something your husband would do, right? if you're a doctor, you're diagnosing things and then you're offering ideas for treatment. Well, diagnostic skills, I think people who have had training in error detection in college have an easier time of hearing. A lot of times I just keep my nose in the music because seeing the music I can hear and I know what's missing just because I'm looking at the music. I don't have to watch them or whatever. And when we're first learning things, and I do that a lot of times. You need to get on the other side of the table. I think that's the one thing I did that made me a better director. Is I got on the other side and I did all the drills that are in all the books. I learned how to play bells myself. Musically, I knew a lot, but I had not played bells. And I got over there and I know what the difficulties are because I got on the other side. If you haven't played in a bell choir as a director, then you need to do it. It's not as easy as it looks. For some people it looks hard, but it's harder than it looks. and there's just so many things to listen for in Handbill. It's a lot more complicated than people think, as far as listening is concerned. So if you improve your listening, and then you also need to know what the solutions are, and that's where you learn them on the other side of the table. And it says keep studying and learning as much as possible about handbills. And how do you do that? Well, you're here. You're here, and that's, hopefully that's what you're doing. And you take, listen to everything that you learn, or that is presented to you in groups like this. Listen to other people's comments and what they've tried and what's worked for them. And then go home and try some of those things with your own choir. Some of it won't work for you, but a lot of it will, and it will improve your rehearsal technique and improve a lot of things about the way you prepare. And so whenever I think you have a rock, I go to, I teach a lot of these things and workshops and things, but every time I go to seminar, Arnold Turner makes big fun of me because I go to every class. They all go off and eat and, you know, do other chop and do other things. I go to every single class because I'm trying to learn more every day. And my model for that was Donald Algirin, who really did know most everything about handbells. But every time he worked with a choir, every time he went anywhere, he just loved to learn something new. It was just the greatest thing. He just loved to. And he would go tell everybody else what he had learned. And I would like to have that same eagerness for learning.
Thank you again for listening to this podcast. To learn more about the Alleluia Conference, visit us online at www.baylor.edu/alleluia.